Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Yep, we have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and all kinds of other things. I thought tonight would be an interesting show to deal with a subject we've talked about on occasion. Tonight I would like to deal with maintaining health in a spiritual life. Now, for most people, this show may not be an appropriate show because they aren't necessarily interested in leading a more spiritual life. But for the folks who are listening out there to this show tonight, it may be important. And when I say spiritual life, I don't mean that you have to be, quote-unquote, heavily committed into what some people call spiritually disciplining, etc. If you are, tonight's show is even more important, so that's fine. But if you're not, there'll still be a lot of information that will be helpful. And when I think about the subject in general, let's talk about what I mean by the words. I'm talking about health in terms of not having loss of awareness, function, the ability to, we'll say, live in the manner in which a person seeks to do so without having some physiological, emotional, or mental issues. And at the same time, in terms of a spiritual life, I'm talking about a life that has within it a concern for living a life more along the thought of God and within God's thought as far as that person, an individual, is thinking about and what it means to them to have a creator and to live within the thought of that creator's existence. So that's what I mean by a spiritual life, and that's what I mean by maintaining health. And so that's how we're going to start off tonight's show. Now, many people have a great number of illnesses. And most folks in the world think it's serendipity. In other words, oh, I caught this, I got that, I have a genetic tendency towards, I had an accident that produced, I have people I'm catching things from, I have a lack of certain, we'll call it nutrients or other factors that require more time and money than I'm willing to or have to offset the issues of. That's where many people come from. And there's a there's almost a need for some people to see their life that way because it removes it from their ability to take responsibility. They don't want to be responsible for the health in their life. So having these, I'll call them semi-fake explanations for all of their health issues, gives them a means of having an out. Now, does that mean that I'm blaming everybody for their health in general? Blaming? No, I don't think it's a question of blame. I'm just saying that we are all responsible for our health, and if we want, we have the ability to change that. But to change it requires a commitment to being, we'll say, more spiritual than most people are seeking, and also to, within that spirituality, recognize that the health is an asset that goes towards living with a co-creation with our Creator, living within the co-creation with our Creator. So that's the issue. It's not a simple kind of thing that, oh, well, anybody could do this and could maintain health regardless of how their life is lived. I am saying the opposite. Okay? So there is a kind of responsibility here, but it is only to the point that someone is willing to live at some level of a spiritual life that they can maintain health. This creates a real problem because most of the world wants someone else to be responsible for their health in both a primary and secondary fashion. In the primary fashion, they go to, many people call them health providers, doctors, people who have special skills, etc. And these people then offer both advice and, quote-unquote, the ability, usually through governmental support, to prescribe and to intervene in their patient's life. And then, in addition to that, they, in a secondary sense, deal with it through the government agencies connected to drug companies and the like. And sometimes these days it's getting into almost anything, any product, that, because that's the way the FDA is treating it, that has anything to do with health. So it is becoming a system in which people are seeking the government to be responsible in a secondary sense and some kind of provider to take a primary concern for their health. Well, that methodology is a non-spiritual and very specifically a material and most of the time godless way of attempting to maintain health. I'm going to say something relatively controversial, that method is invariably doomed to failure. So in other words, if you're really big on, we'll say, governmental health systems and nationalized health and the FDA and licensure of everything and everybody and on, and that you can't even take an OTC product eventually without having somebody giving you permission, if that's kind of your headspace, probably tonight's show is not going to do a lot for you. But also be aware that I'm bringing this up so that for the rest of us who aren't into that genre, we can start delineating the differences and recognizing how to maintain some level of freedom, which is not easy. And in many cases requires either breaking the law or ignoring it. And it causes, for most people, a great deal of consternation because the very process of trying to maintain your health is virtually an adversarial position with authority and government. That's a tough problem for people who want to live a spiritual life because they would like to be in balance and have good relations with all and not be in a battle just to literally be semi in control of their own health. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. And again, this system is designed for both failure and for removing responsibility from people from finding God. It sounds so weird. I know, that last statement sounds terribly weird. But the bottom line of it is, almost all the people that are in favor of the more controlling side of this situation are people who are, in some ways, anti-God. And they don't know that. That isn't, they don't connect the two because they're so anti-God, they don't see God has anything to do with health. And so, ultimately, their processing about the situation is that they don't want people to be free. And they think that freedom is antithetical to there being equality. And maybe that is true, by the way, because when we are free, we have the ability to be individual and creative, which makes us different. But when we lose our freedom, we become similar to most others. And then I guess if other people believe that that's what they want, and they define that as equality. See, I call equality the ability to be more and more free, whereas if others call equality the ability to be not free, but to be the same as others, then you can see the clash that comes from that. So this is the problem about maintaining health, is that spiritual people want to maintain their own health. That's one of the first things that comes to their mind. Freedom is more important than getting something from others to be taking responsibility for their well-being. And that's a totally opposite position than those who want to have the responsibility taken from them because they want the excuse of not being either in control or responsible for their health. And so no matter what they do, it's not their problem. It's somebody else's who's supposed to be taking care of it. And that's just the way it is. All right. Now, does that mean if you're maintaining a health and a spiritual life that you're, as an example, going to reject professional people and their opinions, technologies, even drugs? Are you going to reject all those things? And are you going to reject not only patent medicines, but maybe all medicines? Or are you going to reject all technologies of various forms outside of just drugs or medicines of various sorts and other techniques? And the answer is, why? Why would you do that? God made human beings so that they could create civilization. Civilization is using the lower kingdoms, which includes the animal, the plant or vegetable, and the mineral kingdoms, for the purpose of extending our ability to use our bodies and senses in ways that are improvements. That's what civilization is for, and civilization is part of us. It's like we are the first creatures in the hierarchy of life that creates civilization. Not to say that others beyond us don't. It's just that those kinds of civilizations take on a different, a more, we'll say, unified nature. Ours is more segregated to the individual sub-kingdoms below us. We seldom unify them at the present level here on Earth that humans function in. But nevertheless, we are supposed to do this, and that's part of being part of God. So I know some folks say, well, I want everything to be totally natural. You know, I don't want to take anything. I don't want to use any technologies. I don't want to do anything to maintain my health. Well, interesting dilemma, because then you're living the life at best of an animal. Maybe you're going to become a plant. But the point is, you're not going to be a human being. And you're not following the spirit of God, because the spirit of God is the thought of God, is for us to use these other kingdoms. If you're a big, let's say you're a big evangelical Christian who follows in a Protestant format, a highly Protestant format, and maybe even to the level of extremism, that everything is in the Christian Bible. Well, even in the Christian Bible, there's hundreds of herbs and other things that are mentioned as help for human beings. I mean, and other processes. So if you're going to reject that, you already got a problem with your very nature of your religious belief. Now, I'm not saying that you only go with the Bible, because the Bible was written for a time and a place and for people of a very long time ago. That's part of the problem, that many people who follow things in a historical sense, they get caught by the history that they follow. and they don't grow beyond it. I don't believe that's part of God's plan either, but if you do, that's okay. I'm just suggesting here that that may not be the only way to look at these things. Does that mean we shouldn't know anything about history? No, we should know a lot about history. Combined, all the things about history gives us the ability to become open-minded, provided that we look at all parts of history and not one little segment of it, and we become closed-minded. That's always a danger and a problem. And not good for mental health, by the way. All right, so let's go on. I mean, I hope I'm not trying to be controversial, but I'm trying to say what I find to be true. Sometimes that seems controversial because, you know, the most of the world doesn't think the way I do. Well, that's the reason they don't have this show. And it's the reason other people aren't necessarily listening to them on Friday evenings, right? Okay, so we kind of got a consensus on that idea. All right, let me go on. What else do we need to understand then in defining and explaining what I mean by mental health and the spiritual life? Well, when people are living truly a spiritual life, whatever level that is for themselves, the things that I am talking about have already started to happen for them. So if you are wondering whether you're living a spiritual life, what I've said so far in the first, whatever, 18 minutes of the show should already be resonating. There should be something going on in you. It doesn't have to be everything I said. And certainly by the end of the 2 hours, that should be true. If I'm right, assuming I'm right. Okay. Let's make that assumption, kind of with great reservation. All right, so that's one of the ways you can tell that, you know, you'll know if you're living a spiritual life, because you're going to say, oh, yeah, freedom, oh, man, that's the first thing I'm concerned about with Obamacare, you know, no freedom. I mean, all the decisions are made for you, everything's going to be tied with a ribbon and a bow and maybe a pair of handcuffs, and that's going to be my life and death. All right, so maybe that's one of the things that concerns you. But it may not be. That may not be the issue. But there may be a lot of other things that do fit into the genre that I've been talking about. And so it all does come together for you. Now, what are some of the other elements, then, that gives us a foundation for discovering if we're leading a spiritual life so that we can truly maintain health? And some of the other factors are concern for others. But in a weird way, not the socialistic concern that you're going to make a system that everybody else has to follow and you're going to make the rules, or at least you're going to find someone or be with someone who does make the rules. Or, because if that's the case, that's not spiritual life. But if you're concerned for others so that they can be free to make their choices, different from your own, very likely, because they have different even health concerns, which we're going to go into tonight. But they have a lot of other factors that makes them unique. They're creating themselves individually while they work in a group process with everybody to ensure that everybody else has a right to be individual and creative. Wow. That's the key. It's anti-socialism by every method imaginable. And it is, in some ways, not anarchical either. In other words, it isn't about, you know, everybody just does whatever they want. No, everybody does what seems to be helpful for everyone else, not necessarily what is just best for themselves, but helpful for others in the long run as well. Now, how can you get that way? How do you maintain your own health in a life that you're trying to live in whatever defining way you have of being spiritual, and yet your concern for others is a major part of that decision? Well, you live in a way that you make sure that other people have at least as much freedom as you do. And if they don't, you're willing to give up some of your freedom so that they have approximately an equal or greater amount than you do. That's spiritual life. Okay, did you follow what I just said? Because it's the antithesis of socialism. Socialism is based on materiality, and it is that people have equal material things, but there's no concern for the spiritual nature of human beings. And so ultimately what happens is that there is forced, we'll call it redistribution and social justice or equality of material things, with no freedom for people to be creative and individual, or very limited, in almost every way imaginable. And people are not willing in socialism to sacrifice their material things for the ability to be creative and free for others. Ooh. They might do it for their own ability to be creative and free, if they're in the class of people, because amazingly, socialism is very classified in terms of divisions, of those in power and control. So if you're one of the ones in power and control and you're in a socialistic system, especially if you're in an even further more exaggerated system called communism, then the results are that what you want is to be in control, and you want others, therefore, to not be in control. And the results are the opposite of maintaining health. So what happens in those systems that rely heavily on socialism is, in most circumstances, the population becomes less and less healthy over time. It may take several generations, by the way, for this to all take place. And there's a lot of reasons for it. The smaller the group, the smaller the population, the longer it takes for socialism to fall apart and for health to become a serious issue. The larger the group or country, the faster it declines and the more the system fails to help people be healthy, because it's based upon material issues and God's not in it. And you can't maintain health unless you're maintaining part of God in your life. And if the system is anti-God or a-God, in other words, like amoral, meaning it's not supporting or not supported by God, not necessarily anti, though, the results are that health declines, just plain declines. An example of this would be a country like Great Britain, England. And you look at that and you say to yourself, well, they initiated after progressivism took over in 1915 or so, they initiated the beginnings of nationalized health, which became fixed during and after World War II. Now you can say to yourself, "Well, yeah, but a lot of people wanted it, and everybody seemed to like it for the first few years, and then this and that." But the bottom line is that nobody seems to like it today. Even the people who are very material don't like it. The only people who like it are the people who are in control, and they have all the power, and so they get the best treatment, they get the best of everything, and everybody else suffers. Yep, okay. So, those kinds of issues are the things that we need to be looking at, and it's going to be part and parcel of most of the scenarios and explanations I'll be giving tonight. And some of the very nature, the foundation of what I'll be expressing will come out of this philosophy and thought that I'm expressing first before we get into some of the specifics. All right. Now, that being the case, and not trying to further describe the negative of all this, let's get into the positive side of things. If you're willing to give up whatever freedom you need or you have so that others can maintain their own growth and freedom and individuality, then you have arrived into spiritual life. What I'm really saying is that spiritual life means sacrifice, and the two go together. if you're not willing to make the sacrifices, then you will inevitably be facing a paradoxical and eventually a highly contradicted philosophies that end up not being health for yourself, besides that of others. Health requires that a person be willing to make sacrifices. And those sacrifices are not just for themselves, but for others as well. All right. Now let's move on to some of the more specific elements of some of the things that I'm talking about. A lot of the highly specific situations and circumstances we'll cover after our first break. But let me give you a general idea of what some of these things are. Firstly, when we talk about health, I'm referring to not just physical health, although a lot of people, that may be the first thing they think of. I'm also talking about astral or emotional health. And that's kind of, that's almost an oxymoron, because if you're emotional, you're going against being healthy in an astral sense. And that doesn't mean you don't have feelings when you are seeking astral health. As a matter of fact, the whole purpose of astral health is to improve your level of feeling, but not your level of emotion. Emotion is feelings that are directed about, for, and with yourself. Okay? That's where the feelings are. It's all about me. And if you are more spiritual, then your feelings are about giving and loving and how you can help others to become more so themselves at the same time. So, not just physical. We definitely have this astral, which is then connected to love if it's going to be beneficial. Now let's go to the mental side. There's mental health as well. What does mental health do? Mental health helps us to become more open-minded, more truthful in the way we express ourselves with others, which may or may not have anything to do with the accuracy of the statements we're making in comparison to the accuracy of how those statements are helping others to become more truthful and, at the same time, more open-minded. Wow. So you may be telling people out-and-out lies by your own standards to just help them to be more open-minded and to be more thinking in ways that shows that they understand how others think besides just themselves. Mental health also involves the ability to determine truth inside yourself, besides that which you help others to find, and to be able to live your life in a way that is the truth, not espouse it necessarily, but live it. And this is another problem, because a lot of people say, well, mental health is something with your genes, or maybe it's what you ate yesterday, or some kind of other airborne allergy, or maybe it's the environment in which you live and for how other people are treating you and whatever. Actually, mental health, the foundation of mental health, is living your life in a way that is an example of truth that you find in your mental awareness, and that eventually becomes mental consciousness. If you live your truth, you will maintain mental health. For those of you who are not, you already know you're mentally ill. How do you know it? Because when you don't live the truth, even though you may know the truth, even though you may understand the truth, you don't live the truth, what happens is the ability for you to have cogent thought that you can exchange readily with others is diminished by the minute, day, hour, whatever. And As it gets diminished, your life becomes more and more perplexing and distant and lonely from those around you. That's how you know. And it's as clear as, day once it starts happening, because the mental illness is not what most people think it is. You know, it's not someone thinks, well, I'm really a cabbage today. Look at me, I'm a cabbage. Now, mental illness is that you no longer have connection with those sentient things, beings around you. You're now in your own isolated little box, disconnected, and really living what I would call an altered reality. Your reality does not represent the truth. Does not. Even though some mentally ill people actually understand some levels of truth. They actually do. But as long as they don't live it, they make themselves more and more mentally ill. Wow. Now, that's not to say that most people who are mentally ill also don't have a clear grasp on many truths. They don't. That's true. But whether you do or don't is not the issue. It's whether you're living the truth that determines. Same is true about living love in the astral body. If you're living love, if your life is one of giving to others in ways to help them, becoming more giving themselves, etc., then you're living life, again, in an astral sense as a soul. And the life that you have as a feeling is a life of great gratitude and appreciation for the ability to give to others as much as possible. Now, if you're thwarted in giving because of great service and sacrifice, that's a stage. And that happens to some, but very few, people who live a spiritual life. There are stages in which we must go through that. It's one of the most defining elements of, we'll say, leaving the human kingdom. And you can't leave the human kingdom until you get through that paradox. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's true. You have to put yourself in positions where others become your failing. Others destroy your creations. Others become the nemesis of your very existence, and those others are the ones that you're serving and sacrificing for. And you say, well, why do I have to do that? Oh, my God, it's not at all. I don't think that's fair. The whole point of it is that it's not fair. The whole point of it is that it's the very essence of negating all the elements of materiality and socialism and communism and all of the isms that have the negative anti-God approach. It gets you in touch with evil, and so that you can understand it at the depths of an understanding that goes beyond human. It gets you in touch with all of the elements of extreme selfishness that human beings have, so that you'll never misunderstand it again. Because you can't go on to the next kingdom until you understand all of the problems in the kingdom you're in. And to understand them, you have to become them. You have to live them. They have to be showered on top of you. It's a terrible, we'll say, consequence of preparing to leave. It starts at the beginning. Well, it starts at the very end of the second initiation, for those of you who understand what that means. And it travels much more intensely through the third initiation, and it culminates in the fourth. It's a significant process of changing us into superhumans. But one of great sacrifice. Remember that word, sacrifice. And so you're literally sacrificing everything about who you are for all that is beyond you to become something greater than you are. And you create yourself into that greater thing by giving up that which you are in the moment. And it's a tough thing to do because you're never quite sure that that's what's going to really happen. You're always deliberately through this system in doubt and afraid. There's always some element of fear. The fear isn't of death. The fear is of not being able to serve. Because ultimately, most people's last we'll call it glamour, is to be of service. And ultimately, sometimes the greatest service someone can supply is to bear the loss of one's service so that others can see that you do go on and become something greater in the process. It's a tough one. It's a real tough one. But those are real exceptions, and for most of us, it's not going to be the issue in this particular life. But it is important. It is important to know these extremes so that we can grasp in a more, we'll say, positive way all of the things that we will be facing. The extremes just gives us some, you know, yardstick to look at where we are. All right, so maintaining a health in a spiritual life does require great sacrifice, but not as great as the most extreme levels that I just mentioned. Some of them are more, we'll call it, perfunctory. And when we come back from break, we'll look and examine some of these elements on a more practical scale than the highly conceptual one that I have presented so far. But I'm really fascinated by this concept, the concepts that I talked about, because they give us a foundation for moving ahead. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break. You can listen to some commercial stuff. And then when we come back, we'll go a little bit more on the practical side. I'll still talk about some of the concepts, add some more concepts and whole ideas, but less of the just purely conceptual framework. So we will be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, give or take a few, from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about maintaining health in a spiritual life. And if you didn't hear the first segment, then you're probably going to be wondering why I'm saying certain things I'm going to say now. But you can go back and listen after the show is up in a couple days. So re-listening sometimes helps, and sometimes if you missed, you can go back and hear it then. Time is very interesting these days. You can hear things from a long time ago. All right, so when we are maintaining health in the spiritual life, we need to balance. And part of the balance comes between these two kind of difficult issues. One of them is we need to balance our sacrifice for others and our sacrifice in maintaining that others can have health themselves with maintaining our own health so that we can help others and so that we can gain more consciousness and with that consciousness be better givers and wiser at the same time. Let me give you some practical understanding of what I'm just saying. Let's say that you're prone to getting headaches. Okay. And one of the things you've noticed that is if you get a headache and you go off for an hour somewhere in a quiet place and maybe put a automatic vibrating device on your head, sort of giving yourself a massage, and maybe not thinking about anything in particular that is very lower mental in thought, the headache goes away. And if you do this, then you're much more productive and you have a greater ability to both be aware and then understand the things that are going on around you in the next few hours after you finish that. But at the same time, during the hour that you're doing that, you are very focused on yourself and not necessarily sacrificing for others at that moment because you're not out doing something else, because your headache is debilitating you to the point where if you did go out and did things only for others, it would not work. Now you might say, well, there's that problem with the paradox and everything. Yeah, that's right. Now let's say we take the same situation and there's a great need for you to be serving during that hour that you normally would deal with the headache that has come upon you. But the need is so great and by others so that they can serve and be co-workers with you that the bearing of the headache and the severity and painfulness of it during the hour that you would usually normally use to get rid of it is more important that you do that and just go through with the pain and the difficulty. And maybe then the headache might go away. If you're right, the headache might go away actually because you served so much more during that hour than in comparison, trying to take care of yourself first so that you can serve better later. So here is an example of the ability to have and exercise wisdom, which shows that wisdom provides a balance. It shows to the person who is being wise what is the best way to serve with the abilities they have at the moment, including their own lack of health, because a headache is a lack of health. And they can make the choices based upon what does the most good, not what is good in all situations, because there is no such thing. Only what works best in each situation at that moment. So you see, this whole thing is not as simple as some people would like it to be. Now, you can't write a book about this and say, item number 600 and whatever, this is what the way you do it. No, because it's going to change. It's going to be based upon yourself and how you decide is best. And that is part of spiritual life. And you might say, well, what about the Buddhist way of the middle path and all that? Well, this is it. I mean, this is truly the real definition of it. Most people think that the definition has to do with some kind of phrase or some kind of written down rule that they're going to apply in every given situation. It's just the opposite of that. There are no rules that you can go to. There's no book you can find. It's just just literally having the wisdom to know at any moment how, why, what is best. Not for yourself, but best for co-creating with God. And if you don't have that concept of co-creation with God, you can't get to the bottom of the situation. And you're lost. And you get contradictions. And you won't find the real truth. Okay. Now, for a lot of folks, that sounds kind of wishy-washy. Like, well, I want to know definitely what to do all the time. And if you're into that genre, you have a problem. The problem is that you are not both open-minded enough, and you are not, we'll say, comfortable enough in taking more responsibility for who and what you are. When you take more responsibility, you recognize that you're the creator of your spiritual life, and no one else can be. You're actually a co-creator with God of your spiritual life. Well, God, though, is also represented by everybody else, so you're never truly excluding others from the process. You're looking at it as a whole, as the big picture, because that's how you see God. But others are also delineated by how much they are serving or not. So you're not going to give up the health in your life for those that are functioning so poorly and so badly that it would be a great waste of yourself to try to help the health of others who have neither appreciation for, gratitude for, or ability to serve others in the ways that you're even serving them. That would not be a good thing in most circumstances. There are these exceptions that I talked about towards the end of the last segment where people are expected to do that sometimes because of unique situations and how they serve and why they're serving in the level of advancing themselves into the next kingdom. But that's a rare thing, very rare, and not common to the issues that we're going to be discussing for most folks tonight. All right, some of the other factors that then come into play. Okay, so you got to figure this thing out about health. What about money? How much money should you spend on your health? Well, it's no different than anything else. Money is compressed time and energy. How much time and energy will you spend on getting well in comparison to service? But if the majority of your life is going to be spent in trying to get and maintain your own health and not in service, what will that do? Well, according to what I defined in the earlier part of the show, it will lead to worse and worse health for yourself. So you've got to be able to look at that, your life in terms of that perspective. But you can't completely ignore your own health because then it will so interfere with your ability to serve others that there will be no way to serve them either. That's the middle part. That's the part of the wisdom that comes into play. See, hopefully. Where are some of the biggest problems that people have? Let's start with the physical part of existence. Why is it that people have such a hard time, particularly here on Earth, maintaining any kind of physical wellness? And we do have a hard time doing that. And for the most part, it has to do with the Earth is a very dark kind of planet. It's controlled overwhelmingly by the third ray, partly because most of its reasons for existence come under the guise of what is known as third type of energy, the third ray. Energies that are dealing with the question of civilization that we so often talk about, and what I mentioned earlier, and also dealing with from the perspective of a greater being who controls what Earth is about, at least in a philosophical sense, that Earth is here for tremendously large reasons that deals with very esoteric, meaning hidden subjects, like can a relatively primitive planet like Earth develop humans who eventually can overcome evil in a relatively spiritual sense-wise short period of time, which is just in literally millions of years. So the question becomes, is this possible? And so Earth is the laboratory to check this possibility out. Why is it necessary? Because there are some other planets besides just Earth that are in jeopardy of becoming controlled by evil, and Earth is an experiment trying to get a bunch of souls together who are willing to participate in this experiment to see if we can overcome the evil first. No guarantees, but it is an experiment. The souls that are here, our souls, came here for this grand experiment, and some other reasons too, but this is part of the deal. Why don't we know about it? Well, you only would know about it by disclosure of the plan to yourself. You can only understand the plan when you co-create more of it with God and others doing the same. You're not doing that, you won't know what the plan is, and what I'm saying to you doesn't make any sense. Right? Got it. Okay. So, then health then fits into this whole situation because our health is dramatically going to be affected by the fact that we're on a planet that's primitive enough to create a lot of problems, mostly unhealthy things. And also, at the same time, this is a place where much greater levels of sacrifice are necessary even to come close to truly healing ourselves. And so it's a mess. People may go to doctors who are not necessarily living a spiritual life. They may go and try every kind of cure-all and still very quickly grow old and die from ailments. Or if they're in an accident, it's because their senses have diminished so far their awareness is too low to keep them safe. So these sorts of things happen. And then, in addition, Earth is very war-prone, and because the evil is all around us, and so there's constant violence and crimes and wars that kill many people or maim and produce a lot of injury and unhealthiness. So overall, looking at this whole spectrum of things that we are facing here on this planet, we're not doing too badly considering that it is a place where things really do suck, and they are bad for more than they are good. But what better place if you're an adventuresome soul who wants to do something more than most other souls might to come here and give it a shot? Not all the souls create incarnations that are capable of withstanding the tremendous forces that this world can deal out to a human being. So it's a tough place. Tough place. But if we came here voluntarily, even though you may not believe so, and we leave voluntarily as well. All right, so the circumstances, therefore, in maintaining health comes into the element of being in one of the hardest places to do so, and we chose to be here, so it's our challenge, and that's part of where we are. Now, does that mean that it's almost impossible to ever be healthy? No. You can be healthy, but there's always a time limit associated with it, unless you're leading a very spiritual, including spiritually disciplined, life. Then you may be able to maintain health through most of your lifetime. And your lifetime will be unusually long. How long? Way past 100 years. Past where most people consider people live. Into the 120s, 130s. Yeah, you're going to live very long and very productively in terms of spiritual life. And so this is going to be the bottom line for those few people who can get there. What about the rest? Well, the rest of the folks are going to die pretty early. Going to have a lot of unhealthy things develop from all of the remaining selfishness that exists in their life. And the inability to balance the spiritual life so that they can maintain health. This is what the problem becomes. And life becomes, in a physical sense, unusually short. Unusually short. A bit longer than it has been in some circumstances, but naturally a bit longer in a healthy sense. Remember, living a diminished awareness, which leads to diminished consciousness, is no more life than someone who lives decades less, but lives with high consciousness and coming from high awareness. The two lives are not necessarily going to produce a significant level of difference in terms of the closeness with God. Usually, the life that is most connected to co-creating with God, the life that truly has as its, we'll say, meaning, a spiritual life, that life will, in the long run, have the most self, most health involvement. There'll be periods where it won't, but at least in the long run, it will. So we have really come a long way in less than an hour here to beginning to gain some understanding of how we can maintain a healthy life. Get more specific now. I'll get more specific after I come back from my next kind of break at this point. I want to mention a few things to you. I think it's pretty important. First of all, those of you who are interested in early human life on Earth, you can go and hear Mimi talk about it and participate in that. It's usually some discussions that are involved. On Monday, this coming Monday, November 21st, from 7 to 8:15 p.m., over at Barnes & Noble in the Tempe Marketplace, which is on McClintock and Loop 202. And come in on Monday and participate. Yeah, you don't have to call or anything. You can just, it's open to the public. And it's near the gift section, wherever that is, the southeast corner of the store. How's that? And there are going to be some chairs set up there. So go in and participate. If you're anywhere in the metropolitan Phoenix area, that's where it's going to be. Barnes & Noble, Tempe Marketplace, the Clintock and Loop 202, this coming Monday. And if you heard it on this show, say, hey, I heard about it on the show, so that others know that that's where we got it from, too. All right. Also, I want to mention to you that if you haven't had any opportunity to try my Chi-Jizik, this is a good time to check it out. I use it all the time. I really do. I think this stuff really works. And what is it? Well, it's an analgesic, but it works differently than almost anything else out there because it moves energy around in the body so that it limits the amount of pain and increases the amount that people both feel good and heal in the process of maintaining a healthy situation. We're going to be talking about some of these things in tonight's show, so I thought tonight would be a good time to tell you that if you go to buyjizik.com over in on the Internet, you can get it there. And you also can go to Healthy Habits Health Foods over on 7th Street in and Bethany in Phoenix, and you can buy it there if you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area. So this stuff really works. And you do have to take more pills than most people are used to, but this stuff also lasts a lot longer, like up to 8 hours. So you don't have to take them over again as often as many others. And the most important thing is that it isn't just dealing with trying to suppress pain, it's trying to eliminate it. And what a difference that makes over time. You take a couple, two, three doses, we'll call it, serving sizes, of 5-HT-GSIC, and by the third time, you won't have the pain anymore. Yeah. Or it'll be so diminished that you can take a lot less. That's what you can expect. And also you can check out Soul Balance, Ideal Soul Absorption, Resveratrol for adults and pets at the same site. So you can get all that. Check it out. BuyGSIC.com. BuyGSIC.com. All right. Let's get back to tonight's show. Again, maintaining health and a spiritual life. Why is it that certain things make a difference that we consume, rub on our bodies, smell, whatever all that is? And that's because we are here to interrelate with God, and God is in part life in the kingdoms. The three kingdoms we're familiar with are the mineral, the vegetable or plant kingdom, and the animal kingdom. Those kingdoms have within them various sources coming from the life in the kingdom itself, or pre-life in the case of minerals, that interplays in our body and provides a balance between two things called prana and chi. Chi is the first of the three kundalinis, and prana comes from the sun. And the two are necessary to be balanced in our bodies. They're like the, you know, kind of the yin and yang business, male, female. Where you get into this process of beginning to balance yourself. Remember I said you've got to be in a balanced state. You're trying to reach a state of balance so that you can maintain more health. And these elements that come from these kingdoms can provide us with sometimes, depending upon what we choose, ways of balancing ourselves. There are different forms of different medicines that do this. That's Ayurvedic. It's mostly from the Far East, but it is a type of medicine started in India that is based upon these forces that develop when we're out of balance, goodness. The forces themselves are really just a result of being out of balance. And so the approach in this system is to try to bring balance back in. But remember, the balance is still using these lower kingdoms of life. It's fascinating. They still are. There's also the human kingdom. And how do we use the human kingdom? Well, humans can provide all kinds of services, from massage, acupuncture, to numerous forms of iridology and other means of human being interacting with another human being to provide some form of balance. So we shouldn't eliminate human beings. I wasn't trying to. But generally speaking, most people think of medicines, which usually come from the lower kingdoms, not from the human, at least not at this point. There are some medicines that are being made from humans directly. Most of those have to deal with the approach of manipulation of genes and DNA approach, and in some cases, the exchange of body parts. I mean, we think of heart transplants or kidney transplants or whatever, liver, whatever. Those are, you know, what we're doing is we're using part of the human kingdom. True, most of the time the people that comes from the deceased people, sometimes it does come from a living donor as well. Bone transfer does, kidneys. So when we're doing these things, what we are really doing is we're using, again, elements from the kingdom itself to improve our own awareness, our own bodies in their awareness, so that we can gain more life through balance and health. All right. So if you get everything balanced in your system, the energies particularly, the bodies can maintain themselves in a circumstance, a homeostasis, a circumstance of health, for a fairly long time. There is a limit on how long that time may be. Generally speaking, the absolute maximum is considered to be 147 years. It's 49 times 3. And why is that? Well, after that period of time, the energies in the three kinds of bodies that we have, mental, astral, and etheric physical, the energies become tired. They need time to be no longer part of such a complex and difficult and force-producing organized system, and they need to be let go. Now, if you say, well, isn't there an exchange of energy continually going on? Yeah, there is, except that when energy exchanges itself, it very quickly picks up sort of as a memory imprint the level of energy and stress that was there to begin with. So although it's new energy coming in, and it does refurbish just a little bit, it also is much more impressioned by what is known as inertia. And the inertial energies dealing with gravity fairly quickly makes it like the old. So it doesn't have this long-lasting, in effect, to get new energies continuously. As a matter of fact, after a while, it won't work at all. So that's a fallacy, unfortunately. That it's all with new energy, you're just a new person. Every 7 years, every cell in the body is new. Yeah, but you know what? When you look in the mirror, it's still you. And if you haven't chosen to live a more spiritual life, you're still sick. Probably sicker. Yep. Okay, so you've got these forces, if you look at it from Gunas. If you're looking at it from other methods, if you're looking at it from some of the Chinese's energy approach, they rely more on the qi side. They sort of take one side of the fence. And the qi, which is really a feminine issue, has to deal with so much of the element of the earth that the Chinese are really big into the mineral content of earth itself and how those minerals affect. And from herbal issues, dealing with certain kinds of plants that have reached a point where they are in great balance with their qi and prana and can rebalance people who are out of balance in that way. Wow. That's what these herbs do. And they're specialists in maintaining balance. Some of them only exist to balance animals and people, and sometimes, rarely, but sometimes other plants too. So that's their whole life is about that. And we call them herbs because of that, in part. Pretty neat, huh? Not all plants are herbs. Don't think that they are. And not all herbs are necessarily plants. Some come from the animal kingdom, and we still call them herbal remedy, although they're not deer antler, buzz, you know. That is not obviously not from a plant. And it actually has some medicinal value. It really does. Okay, so in order to get ourselves to the point where we're going to be in this homeostasis place, we need to realize that we're dealing with energies, and energies are only going to follow the thought that is spiritual. Let me say that again. The energies that we're dealing with have to be manipulated and changed for our health to improve, but we can't get those energies to follow just any old thought. As a matter of fact, they become resistant to doing that very thing. So if we don't have spiritual thought in ourselves that we're using to co-create with God and to help others to live more spiritually, if we aren't doing that, then the energies that we are using, including drugs, including herbs, including whatever, aren't, over time, going to work because our thought is not spiritual enough to get these things to work correctly. Now, that is going to sound like real heresy to some folks. Right. So what I'm really saying is that two people take a patent and extremely, complex drug. They both take the same drug. One of them is leading a more spiritual life, and the other is caught in materiality. I'm saying that the drug is going to work best in most circumstances if it's the appropriate drug, appropriate meaning it does balance the energies in a person's body by nature. For those who have the health problem, at least that it's aimed at, but only for those who have that health problem, provided that they are spiritual. Not spiritual, it'll have many more side effects, which are really negative effects to its implied purpose. And over time, even the positive effects that it may have started with will diminish and eventually go away, and it'll become life-threatening to continue to use it. So that's the basis. The idea that you have all these terrible effects from drugs with some people, but they just come because of the drug, is nonsense. It happens because of the person. Remember, taking that responsibility for ourselves, it comes from us because we haven't lived in a spiritual way, our own life, enough to get that specific medicine to work in us. Didn't think about it that way, did you, before? But that goes back again to the whole idea in the beginning of the show. You can see how this is starting to maybe stack up and fit together. And a lot of folks don't want to buy what I just told you. And they're into the thing called allopathic science, that everything is external to the self. No matter what we think, no matter how we live our life, it doesn't change the effects of treatment. Totally and completely wrong, but an interesting, if not very destructive, illusion to live within. All right. Well, that's pretty cool stuff. Now, you might say, well, then, wow, there's all kinds of implications with that. Yeah, there are. Even though a specific remedy may be available, it may not work in your body because you're not leading a spiritual enough life for that particular kind of remedy to be of help for you. A real doctor, real being, key word here, who understands all the things I've been talking about so far, would only prescribe those things that fit that person's ability to use in a spiritual way within their life. Because if we know anything beyond or that is too challenging, we'd only become more destructive to the person. Wow. That's a tough one. So when you say, do I find myself a good doctor? If that's one of the criteria, you can see how that's going to be tough to determine. And you may not until you know the doctor a little better, trying them out. Really? Wow. Okay. So then, in a physical sense, maintaining health is tricky, very difficult, and almost always a failure at some level. Why? Because we know people don't live to be 140, and they usually don't live to be 120. Very few make it to 110, and 100 is considered probably a fairly quote-unquote lucky person to have lived that long. So what are we saying? We're saying that we diminish our life because we don't live it spiritually enough. And no amount of, in the physical sense, no amount of treatment can significantly extend our lifetime here in the physical world if we're not leading spiritually. If we're not living spiritually, there's just virtually almost no sense and trying other things, because there's very little that can be done. That's the terrible problem. And when you have a system that believes the exact opposite and functions in that way, such as socialized medicine, or worse, a socialized medicine that is also communistic in sorts, then you have a ridiculous outcome that huge numbers of people die early, and many more people than would ever be conceived are ill in some way, with no avail to finding solutions, because you just can't do it. Wow. Okay, so, that being the case, what happens when you move on from the physical world? The physical world is just a bitch. It's really going to be hard to be successful at treating a lot of illnesses, because the first thing you have to do is take responsibility for them, and most people don't want to do that. And then you have to live your life spiritually with the illness, not in more cases in spite of, not in defense of, and with help from others to overcome it. But that's not going to work. People think it's going to, but usually it's not. Okay. So, and it's okay, by the way, to go to professionals and to seek their advice, because those people, you're helping them to be of service to you, and that's being of service to them. See how it works? It's kind of like the one coming out here. Yeah, it truly is. Okay, beyond the physical world, life is short. People don't average anything much more than mid-70s to 80 years of age, and that's pretty close to about half of what we could theoretically live. And then you've got a lot of people who are going to live their life. We don't know for sure how long, but in the astral world, after they physically die from here. And those folks, now, they're going to live a lot longer in their time, in reference to their time. They're going to live hundreds of years. And they're going to need to deal with the question of astral energy that is focused inward, which is selfish and personally involved, and the astral energy that is focused out as love, hopefully love that is as close as possible to being truly an unconditional and universally unconditional in some circumstances, love to give to others in ways that helps them to become better givers themselves in similar ways that they are co-creating with God. Now, that type of life is partly responsible for some things in the physical life, mostly cancers and we'll call it emotional illnesses. Those are the predominant things that you see coming out of an astral life that has this element of a strong self-focus with limited taking responsibility for the negative astral energy, which we call glamours and other associated energies to it. And to get the balance there requires a kind of different thing. First of all, you're not going to be dealing, whether you're physically alive or not, with the mineral kingdoms in any significant way. You can say, well, what about taking some tranquilizers or other stuff? Those things have limited value. The person needs to still focus in a more spiritual way for them to work properly, or they will either get addicted to them or they won't necessarily get them to curtail some of their self-focused feelings. And the bottom line is that you generally have to match, in order to get the balance, you have to match your creative thought with a significant and very high level of love. And the love has to be wise love, not just some love that only goes towards a person in a single way, and it's because of how you feel about them, rather than what you feel about wanting to give to them. This is the essence of the conflict during astral life, and somewhat it does exist, but in a hidden way, during physical life as well. Now, some people get over this. They go to the other side, they live an astral life, and they start making modifications to their astral life. They start saying, I want to have astral health. I want to get rid of these things called glamours inside of me. They're fixed desires that vibrate and connect to their senses and limit their senses, and then over time destroy their senses and then destroy their bodies. And so they're going to be concerned about that as an issue, but they see the only way they can get over it is to co-create for the spiritual life of others and help them to become more godly first, before ourselves. Now you can say, well, how often does that happen? Actually, it's just not too bad. The odds aren't really as impossible. And how much time do you have? Well, 500 is not unusual years. Some people go way beyond that. Now, the amount of time is less important than what you do with it. Some people who finally get their act together don't care about living 1,000 years in the astral world. What they're concerned about is living the most amount of time in the astral world to be of service to others, whatever that is. And then leaving the astral world soon after that to go on to the next world and serve in very different ways. So ultimately, in looking at this process, we can say that mental health is a balance then of the amount of desires that somebody has, which are selfish, versus the overwhelming and conscious need to serve with others in ways that builds, not subtracts, builds a sense of love that is universal in the other people that we're serving and serving with. So in these circumstances, then, we can literally say that we truly are self-created, even more represented by the astral body than the etheric physical. The etheric physical is so much more difficult because of the forces to be able to change, and it takes so much longer to do so in such a shorter life. You have a much longer astral life in most circumstances and a lot more time in which to live. And there's just a lot of advantages to someone living in the astral world. The main disadvantage is they can't any longer find true ways of being an exemplary, healthy person in the etheric physical world, because after all, they left this world with a failure of maintaining life in their body, the etheric physical, and their service was obviously cut short and reduced. They may suffer as well, or they may not. Suffering is not a requirement. It's an option button. Souls choose it because in the long run it may serve to prevent the soul from moving too deeply into some of the areas of pure and straightforward reduction of getting rid of all of the responsibilities that we might have to others in an astral sense. When people go to the astral world and they live that way, they are mired and entrenched in selfish feelings and wanting to just feel good for their own sake and not care about how others feel and not care about how others are losing health and how you could be of service to help them. That's all gone for the folks who really miss the boat and don't do service in the astral world. We can do service for the astral world while we're physically alive. We are connected. We don't have to be connected in consciousness, in full consciousness, about the astral world. Some people do that by having out-of-body experiences. But we can make successful inroads and to helping others to maintain an astrally healthy life. We can, by helping them to convert some of these fixed desires into true service by love. We can actually deliberately make that part of our process on a daily basis. And there's so many times it happens. It's countless, the opportunities that present themselves to each of us that many of us just ignore. Hopefully we won't in the near future, because this is a grand plan for making some great improvements in maintaining the balance in health. What does it look like to have a balanced astral body? Well, besides that the body gives off light everywhere, and it's pretty neat, the desires that were fixed around some of the centers, because each desire connects in certain ways to certain centers, those connections are broken. And instead of the person being trapped in losing astral awareness, they suddenly gain a huge amount of astral awareness, but it all comes from the higher astral body all the way to the first tier where the astral being has direct knowledge of what is happening. And then you look at it from the standpoint, well, wow, if that's really going on, where can you go from there? And some people actually spend the majority of their time in the astral world or from here as well, in the beginning, before they go to the astral world, as a means of making their life about understanding and love, and that this is their true focus. In this world, it's difficult because there's so much third ray, and this is more of a fourth ray kind of thing, but the results are truly phenomenal when you see people living this way. Now, there aren't a heck of a lot, but there will be more in the future as we get past some of the most difficult times. That is a tremendous, loving, wonderful life. And it can start while you're physically alive. It doesn't have to, you don't have to wait to die. You go to the afterworld to become some kind of loving being. You can become that loving being here. People may not understand you. They may say, oh, loving being, yes. They won't get what you're doing or why you're doing it for. And they may attribute very negative, we'll say rationales to your decisions and your feelings as you may express them. And they may see you as some kind of dark being who's just trying to, in one way or another, you call it love, but try to control people. And that's not the case. But they can convince a lot of people who don't understand better that may be where you're coming. So it is, there's a challenge to this thing. But the clearest way for someone to be seen is for their creative approach to be represented in their service within the life that they're living, if it's a physical life, and it's still representing part of the astral world. Because our astral bodies are there, even though we're here, and our consciousness is focused here, even though we still have astral bodies elsewhere. Once we attune ourselves to living in this way, when we go, after passing out of physical existence, when we go to the astral world, we have just an amazing array of tools that suddenly become available to us. Because the astral body is not a weakness, it's a strength. It becomes a major asset. And instead of worried about our glamours, the thing that we're most concerned about is how do we make this body the most efficient, most effective for all those who still are either physically alive and certainly the remainder who are astrally alive. It becomes a major, major focus. And if you have that, you get tremendous help from beings who live in the astral world. Usually in the higher subworlds, they will come and serve with you and they will help you to become a better server. Talk about a great opportunity. You don't want to pass that one up. So while you're doing all that, your astral body is getting healthier, not sicker. Remember, the true cure comes from focusing and service out on others. And so the astral body, even though a person may have died with a fairly messed up astral body, within a very short time of living in the astral world, that can make that body an incredible light source. That can make that body into all the things that you would hope it to be and more. So it's like having an astral earth. And that can maintain itself for hundreds of years. Wow. Then also, there's the monastic life. And that's going to come after the astral, although people can serve mentally while physically alive and also on astral life. Usually that's done while we sleep, but are awake in consciousness in the astral world. Why is it that we can't just jump into our first etheric body and then out of that into the, like the astral body, and maintain ourselves in that way in the astral space as we do, but instead think of the mental place, space? Well, you can't, because what happens is the frequency of the mental body, and just to make sure that we're talking about the same thing, the overall physics, including the quantum constant, which is, we're going to get heavy into that tonight, changes. And so if we tried to just do out-of-body service by going to the mental world and serving from that world, we would be almost immediately stopped by our inability to live outside of the mental body and be fully conscious in it. So in other words, let's say we're astrally alive, but we're going to go serve in our mental bodies and believe that we can do this by sort of putting our astral body in some kind of like astral animation or state of suspension. Not going to work. The reason is that you still have the astral senses, which supplies information which is far too dense for the mental body to be able to process. And you get a lot of confusion, and most people will literally fall asleep. Some others will suddenly awaken. But in any case, they're not going to be living in the mental world as astral to mental world travelers, as we can while we're in the physical world. The reason we can do it in the physical world is we're in such a slow state here that when we go to the astral world, it's still slow enough, although it's much faster, for us to be able to have and keep our awareness of our world while we keep our self-thought and are able to process everything. Can't do that in the mental world. It's not possible. The mental world thought is way too high. And at the same time, we can't even fathom the range of difficulty to have an out-of-body experience and go directly into the mental world without putting to sleep the astral body. If you don't put to sleep the astral body, it will invariably crush you and wake you up almost instantly so that you can't go on to serve in your mental body in a full conscious state. That's the work of falling asleep. But when you fall asleep, that the elemental energy and the personality does it all for you. And so it collapses a lot of the interfering thought from the astral body, allows that astral body to, we'll call it, do its own thing, so to speak, but it's still eventually going to make some its own choices. But those choices are unfettered by the astral and or physical bodies. Virtually impossible to do it with the physical senses, and then the astral senses compounding it, because those senses will just obliterate the mental sense, and then you won't be able to serve the mental body. Just obliterate. So, people, when they go to sleep, it shuts down the bodies that they're sleeping from. Then they can go on and serve the mental body. They're still fully awake. It's just that it's kind of a cheating system, because the personality is mostly gone during that period of time while you are technically asleep. But you're really not, because you're consciously fully awake and in another dimension of time and space. Hope you could understand that process. It's a little complicated, I know, so it's not easy to understand it. All right, so going to maintain mental health. Going to maintain mental health, as we talked about very early in the show. You've got to have this balance going on, which means that you're thinking of others and you're very open-minded. Now, what do I mean by open-minded? That you want to, you seek an understanding of other people's understandings. You want to understand people's consciousness. You want to understand other people's knowledge as well. And you want to understand, most importantly, the virtue other people are creating called the truth. So if you understand other people's virtue, then you're able to create more of your own to help everybody. If you don't understand other people's virtue, you won't create as much on your own, and virtually none at all if you're quite already, we'll call it egotistical, and you're blocking the understanding of other people's thought. Wow. And that produces a lot of forces in the brain, which eventually leads to mental illness. The illness is this imbalance. The energies are not going to follow your thinking, even though you think your thoughts are so strong, you're not. And over time, you literally wear out the mental senses one at a time. They don't completely destroy themselves, but they produce serious levels of mental illness. Mental illnesses can be the schizophrenia, but it also can lead to all kinds of elements added to mood disorders as well. And so you have a lot of serious mental illnesses come out of the one kind of way that ultimately kind of makes them the way they are. The same is true, by the way, about the astral body. If you have too much, if you're trying to do astral service while you're physically alive and doing astral body, outer body work, not recommended, because what happens is, in many cases, the physical body is still sensing, still having reactions to any of the astral senses that you're having. And those then become your nemesis when you come back, because those senses have many forces in them now that are much more damaged. So every time you go to the astral world, if you don't do it in your sleep, and instead you're going to serve through just doing out of body service, and you're pretty good, let's assume you're pretty good at getting out of your body at that point, then you're still going to have a marked amount of forces and damage that you and maybe others that are close to you will need to repair and to improve. And it becomes a real weight, a serious weight in your ability to be of service. Who would ever know that a pair of shoes or some other kind of thing has any effect on us? Yet all of these issues that we think of as a sensory apparatus and how we're getting physical senses has an effect on our astral body if we're not asleep. Yeah, it does. So people say, well, astral traveling is just great and I can do all the service. They really can't. Most of the time it's failure. Is it possible to do? Yes. Extremely difficult? Yes. And you have to live while you're physically alive, if you're going to do that, in a very spiritually disciplined way, or you're not going to achieve it. Most people won't do that, and so they get into these anomalous kinds of responses and behaviors. And over time, you create very unhealthy conditions, both the body that you're supposedly trying to serve in and the body that you're maybe focused in consciousness in for that life at that time. So that's a real problem. All right. What are some of the significant and, we'll get very concrete now, significant and helpful ways that I can suggest that people who are leading a spiritual life to consider? Well, one of them is to become a vegetarian, but not one that is a vegan. Veganism is difficult. It's hard to get enough protein. And I don't think necessary for most people. Better to just not overtly eat meat. But you can eat some things that in some ways may have had to do with an animal. Eggs are an example. Particularly if they're not fertilized, there's not been consciousness in them at that point. The reason you don't want to eat meat is because the consciousness of the meat is incorporated within it to some extent. The animal, as it existed when it was alive, and then how it may have died, becomes part of the meat itself. Ooh. And think about some of the terrible ways we treat animals we get meat from, and you'll see the problems. So that's one of the reasons I suggest this. But if it was between that and choosing to just be focused out and in service with people, I'd say go with that one rather than worrying about what you're eating. Okay, so that's one place that we can start, maybe make some improvements. Do not use substances as drugs, especially don't smoke, because smoking involves the ingestion of hundreds and hundreds of chemicals. Some of them are very dangerous to human life, extremely dangerous to human life. And when we are, you know, attempting to maintain health, if we are doing things to our bodies that are so disabling, trying to correct that one thing can be the waste of the rest of our life, just trying to fix that one problem. It's not easy, once you mess things up, to fix them, particularly if they're physical things. So I'm going to be, you know, most of the rest of the show I'll try to talk about mostly physical things, some astral and mental, but what else can we do? Well, as we age, our bodies change. We accumulate the negative energies that we have wasted through that sort of full and complete life of spiritual service. Almost everybody does this, so don't think you can get away from it. As you age, though, you can correct by wanting to use your bodies for service for others the problems. There are ways, there are methods, there are healing methods that really do work. And I do suggest you try them. For the most part, herbal remedies and other kinds of natural remedies are better than drugs. Drugs cause forces to increase in our body. They try to heal us through force, and one force against another does not usually produce a healing effect. It changes the symptomatology. It really will. But it is not going to lead to truly health. That's where the problem lies. So if you want to get to the healthy side of things, then try to find the most natural sources and leaving as many drugs alone as possible. At the same time, if there is the best choice to achieve the goal that you're seeking is a drug, then go ahead and use it. Because remember, it's part of God's plan that we use civilization. We use the technologies that we have created. It's not a bad thing. As a matter of fact, we need to be using these things to save time and energy because that's what it does. It extends our senses beyond our own selves and allows us to live a more efficient and effective life. Of course, you need to also know that things that you're doing are going to be helpful, so you have to experiment. There's always a need to experiment. Because that one thing that works on one person will not work on others. Remember that. And one thing is when they do all these trials for the drugs, etc., they don't ask people, well, how spiritual are you? Because we have to delineate you from the people who aren't to know how this thing's really going to affect. They don't do any of that stuff. Maybe someday. But for right now, that's just outside the norm, and it's just not going to happen. Right? Okay, what else? Well, if we get into the, super specific, it's important that a person maintain a life that is clean. And clean, I don't mean by just dirt versus non-dirt. I'm talking about inviting certain disease-causing elements. Fleas. Very serious illnesses. So do some forms of lice, but not as bad as fleas in actuality. And many kinds of other unhealthy things can be around us. Cockroaches carry like dozens of different diseases, displaying diseases. Not keeping food at a cold enough temperature to prevent bacteria growth can be very, very serious and dangerous. Some people have a habit of doing that. If you eat butter, don't let it get dark and very yellowish because that's a sign of oxidation. You may not know that, but that's the truth. Try to buy butter that's as white as possible. Things like, and some people like to say, well, you shouldn't eat this, you shouldn't drink that. things like milk, etc., some people are fine with and other people are not. How you deal with the substance that you're consuming and using is the critical element, not what other people say or not what other people are experiencing, but how you're experiencing. The more you can tolerate and eat many different things, the more you can live in your environment many different things, that's called adaptation, and the more that you can adapt, the longer and the healthier you're going to live. Why is that the case? Well, because if you can't adapt, then it means that you've created so many forces to prevent the adaptation. The forces are really the things that are going to kill you. It just appears that because you can't adapt, you die, but it's really the forces. So you intensify the forces by not being adaptable. Okay, and the longest lives are from those who have the highest level of adaptation because they have developed the most spiritual life. Okay, just so we're staying on the same page about what we're really talking about here, is a spiritual life. What else can you do? Well, in terms of what's called the physical world, I believe in supplementation. Why? Because our environment is relatively toxic here on Earth. There are so many negative things in the environment. Just to overcome and change those things, especially if we live in a city environment, involves taking a lot of supplements. Some of those supplements, I've been recently reading some things from the Life Extension Foundation. They're here in Arizona, actually. And some of the stuff they say makes a lot of sense to me. You can figure that out for yourself, but places like that have a wealth of knowledge, sometimes greater consciousness or understanding about the subject area that they're discussing. But you can use some of that with your own creativity and understanding to determine to what level you might want to change the things that you're interacting with around you, because they produce forces. Sugar produces a lot of the forces in the body. Plain old table sugar, sucrose. Why is it so much worse than fructose? People don't like fructose these days because they say, well, your body doesn't know you're eating it as much and you can gain weight and it has screwy effects on hormones. Well, that's the good news, is because it has limited impact on us compared to sugar, regular table sugar. Because sugar is extremely destructive because of it changes the Krebs cycle in the way that our body responds to insulin uptake. We become insulin resistant by eating regular table sugar. That's fructose doesn't cause that problem. It does have its own issues. But all in all, fructose is a much better source of sweetener than sugar. Sugar is really dangerous. It lowers consciousness. Years ago, a guy wrote a book called The Sugar Blues. If you really want to get afraid of sugar, or at least understand how it works, that's a good book to read, even though it was written in the 70s. Sugar Blues. Forgot his name, but great book. Okay, so staying away from things like that, helpful. Definitely helpful. Taking supplements, supplements are great. You need to know how much and what kinds for the things that your forces in your body are dealing with. If you're a spiritual disciple, this shouldn't be too difficult of a task. If you're just trying to lead a spiritual life, it may take a lot of brain power from you. And you may need some assistance. And you may need to carefully deliberate between two different issues that seem like either one is equally okay for you, but in a sense, it's really going to be okay. You got to gain a lot of understanding about a lot of things to even go through a week and live that week in which you're making mostly positive choices about the things that you're doing. Alcohol, drugs, destroy consciousness. Earlier today, I saw someone say on the news, oh, just drink a pint of beer a day and you'll feel better, and therefore it reduces your risk of heart attack. Well, that may be true because it's you're self-medicating. But the problem is that the alcohol has so many deleterious effects on you. You're literally destroying so much of your body to achieve a state of non-caring that relaxes you. There's a lot better ways to achieve that than that. For the cost, it ages you amazingly. It really destroys large parts of the liver very quickly. And so it's very dangerous and a big aging drug. If you want to look a lot older, drink a lot of alcohol. It'll help you get there faster. And then smoke some cigarettes, and that will finish you off for sure. Cigarette smoking is extremely bad. Ingesting any kind of smoke into the lungs is dangerous for you. Cigarettes are particularly dangerous because they have known carcinogens in them. And, in addition, they really wreck consciousness. They have a vast amount of higher mind destructive value. And there's no direct way to just snap your fingers and get out of this stuff. So, as an example, you can't substitute for common sense in using things that are extremely dangerous for you and saying, well, I'm going to go down that road. You know, that's the way to do it. Yeah. I'll just use this drug to counteract the effects of that drug and use this. That, none of that really works. All it is a state of illusion. What else? Well, again, I'm mostly focusing on the physical life because we are just about out of time. Well, one of the things I can just tell you is if you notice any effect that lowers consciousness from any activity, I don't care if you're masturbating and thinking about having sex with brooms or whatever, I don't care what you're thinking about, I don't care what you're doing, if it's lowering your consciousness, stop and pay attention. Anything that interferes with your daily surface, stop, pay attention. Anything that leads you to believe that you're here for some reason other than to co-create with God, stop and pay attention. That's where you need, those things are the ones that really get you to finding and maintaining health. That's going to help you more than anything else. Well, we are running out of time. I hope tonight hasn't been over the top and just going over too many things too fast. I try to not overwhelm. Sometime, and I have done shows where I got more specific about a lot of other things. Sometime we'll pay more attention to some of that as well. Tonight we dealt with as much in equal amount the concepts behind how you can maintain health in a spiritual life. The main thing to remember is that if you're not leading what by your own standards is a spiritual life, you're not going to be healthy. And you will lead a life of mostly illness and some significant levels of suffering. I hope this has been interesting and helpful. And until we meet again, which will probably be next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.